What is up, freaks? It's your boy Marty Bent here for another edition of Rabbit Hole Recap on Tales from the Crypt. Me and Matt are recording remotely. I just fucked up that intro like six times in a row. It feels weird when you're not here, Matt. It doesn't feel natural. I don't like looking at you through a screen.
Yeah, I like looking at your pretty face.
Yeah, well, you can see it now. It's just obstructed via the digital world. Yeah, what's it is today? Today's Thursday the 21st? Yeah, Thursday, February 21st. The price of Bitcoin, according to the trade block XBX index, is currently waiting. $3,884.76. I'm recording from Brooklyn. Matt's in Amsterdam. It's 5:30 there. 11:30 a.m. here. I'm drinking coffee. Matt's drinking scotch. Cheers to you, sir.
Well,
before we jump into the topics. Cheers. Before we jump into the topics of the day, first, I'd like to introduce this week's sponsor. You guys already know all about them. Honeyminer. Honeyminer is your place to go if you want an easy way to use your computing hardware to earn Bitcoin. They set it up where you can basically connect your GPUs using their software, basically mine the most profitable altcoin chain at any given point in time, and then dump it on market for Bitcoin. Get paid out Satoshis, I believe, every hour. And it's just a constant stream of sats. We actually have a referral link, Matt and I, stackingsats.com. That's stackingsats.com. We're all about stacking those sats. There's no www in front of it, just straight stackingsats.com. And most importantly, if you guys are Linux users out there who have been itching to get on Honeyminer, they recently released their Linux implementation. You can go check that out at honeyminer.com/labs. For you Linux users in particular, they have special deals, zero fees, no account required. Bitcoin, again, pays out, every 2 hours, and profitability is about 10% above market value. This is compatible with Ubuntu 16.04, Ubuntu 18.04, and CentOS 7. So go get started now, honeyminer.com/labs or stackingsats.com. Check them on Twitter, too, at GetHoneyMiner. Matt, we were just talking before we hit record. It's been a pretty slow news week. It's been dragging. It's been hard to write the bent, I was telling you. But we do have some topics here. First, how's life in Amsterdam been? What's been going on out there?
I love the city. It's just it's a nice R&R vacation I got going on over here. Just trying to unplug and relax. And
yeah, tuning out, man. How's it feel to tune out?
It's nice. It's important to do that both in bear markets and bull markets.
Right.
And this city is one of the best to do it in. Highly recommend. I love this city.
I've never been. What's it like?
It's just really chill. People don't realize, like, they have a shit ton of canals here. You know, like, Venice gets all the credit. But Amsterdam is very much a canal city. So you have all these beautiful canals. You're walking all over the place. It's not, like, that big of a city. So it's, like, coming from New York, it's, like, kind of, you know, it's, like, it's a little bit bigger than Boston. But it's just a lot chiller than Boston. One of the chillest cities.
I like chill cities. So anybody that describes a city as being chill makes me want to go there. I got to check out Amsterdam.
And weed and shrooms are legal here, so that's also a plus.
Have you been partaking?
Yeah. No comment. But it's a nice city. I appreciate a city allowing it, at least.
Yeah. Do you feel free?
Free as a bird.
Is there any merchants accepting Bitcoin that you've noticed?
No, there have not been any. Unfortunately, right. I have seen some advertisements for Bitcoin though, which is cool. Some exchange
Bitcoin advertisements.
It's some exchange that's over here.
Okay.
They have like ads.
Does crypto need rules over there?
Crypto? No, the ad actually. Yeah, the ad wasn't very, it's a decent ad, I guess. It's just the website name and a picture of a Bitcoin.
Yeah, simple. Simple but effective, if you're remembering it now. Where do you want to start? Should we start in the real world or the fake internet world? Fake internet money world, excuse me.
Let's start in the fake internet money world.
Okay. So in the fake internet money world, it seems like Samsung just announced that their Galaxy S10 is going to come with a Bitcoin wallet. Has been confirmed. This is not fake news, correct?
It's not. It's real news. Yeah, it's real news. It leaked a while ago. We talked about it in the past, I think.
Yeah, we talked about it a few episodes ago, but now it's officially official. Can you explain like the full specs and what users of the Galaxy S10 can expect when it's delivered with this Bitcoin capability?
Well, we don't really have that many details, but presumably, you know, the Samsung phones already have some kind of secure space on the phone that they use for Samsung Pay and the other Knox features they have, like all the business encrypted stuff they have. So they're probably just, you know, sticking a wallet functionality into there. It looks like it's going to support Ethereum, Ethereum tokens, and Bitcoin. I'm not sure if any other coins have been mentioned.
Interesting.
Yeah, I hope they don't advertise it as cold storage. I don't know what they're necessarily advertising it as, but it's obviously a hot wallet. You know, it's on your phone. It's connected to the internet. It's going to be closed source, I'm sure. But it's good. You know, they have... This is the, you know, the number two smartphone maker in the country and probably the number one in the world. I'm not sure if they're ahead of Apple, but they're up there.
I think they may be number one in the world.
Yeah, one or two. And now they're shipping with Bitcoin wallets, with crypto wallets. So that's a big deal regardless. I wouldn't use it, but, you know, it's a big deal, right?
Yeah, what is that? Yeah. And I'm interested to see if it's like a second-class citizen on the phone or if it's like pretty easy to find. Like will it be on the home screen, like you hit your wallets button? I'm comparing this to iOS. I don't use Samsung, but
I use a Samsung phone. I have the S9 right now. I like, you know, they go a little bit overboard with some of the shit they do, but as far as Android phones go, they're pretty good. I mean, they're like loaded with features that you never use, so it'll probably be like kind of buried, but there'll be an icon you can put on your home screen, or maybe they'll put it in with Samsung Pay. I don't think it'll be any more buried than like the Samurai Wallet app, right? You just go to the Samurai Wallet app. This will just be another wallet option you have that already goes with, you know, like Samsung has like a secure folder where like you can, you know, use your password or your PIN or your fingerprint to like encrypt a folder on your phone that no one can see, you know, keep your nudes there or whatever.
You have nudes, dude?
Like who knows? Like they say that encryption's all like certified and shit, but who the fuck knows, right? But it's presumably better than just keeping it in the regular Files app on your phone. So it's it is what it is, but them offering support is a big deal.
Yeah. No, that's what, like, I guess now I'm a little confused. Like, is it going to be like the health app that comes pre-downloaded with Apple? Like, this Bitcoin wallet is just going to be pre-downloaded when you get the phone. It's not going to be like Samurai where you have to go to the store and download Samurai.
It's probably going to, my guess is probably going to be like a setting.
Okay. Yeah.
Like
exactly.
In the settings menu.
Yeah.
But Samsung does have like a Samsung health app too. So maybe it'll be like that. Who knows?
Yeah. Fascinating. So that's some news. I don't know how that'll affect adoption. Do you think that entices people to develop bad habits with their first experiences with Bitcoin if they depend on this?
I mean, there's probably worse wallets for them to use besides the Samsung wallet, right? Like, there's some really bad wallets out there.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, that's what actually a good segue into what I wrote about in the Ben today. Our boy Stop and Decrypt. Thread that he wrote a few days ago, just basically explaining what a wallet provider would need to do out of the box to create like basically almost like the essential perfect wallet given the functionalities that exist today that you can build. And I guess that sort of ties into this conversation and drives an interesting question. Like, even if let me basically just read what Stop and Decrypt said. basically how to build a Bitcoin Lightning wallet that people want to use. It's available on iOS, looks nice, works smooth, fully fledged Bitcoin wallet. User connect it to their own Bitcoin or Lightning nodes, and your service actively maintains its own node. Your app provably doesn't collect data. It has a warrant canary on launch. Simple, advanced, expert user toggles with warnings, so UX warnings, stuff like that. Allows the users to create transactions offline and announce them elsewhere, like Blockchain Explorer. App users can open channels with any node, not just yours. So, like, providers have a node, but users are allowed to access outside nodes. Non-app users can also open channels with your node, blah, blah, blah. Just goes on, checks the list of what I think would be, like, an ideal wallet. And if somebody were to bring it to market, would sort of crush. But maybe if Samsung comes to market with this shitty wallet out of the box, like, people will be enticed just to exhibit bad habits out of the box, and maybe those other potential better wallets won't get as much adoption. What do you think, Matt?
I mean that thread, like what you just described, is like, it's the dream wallet, right? It's like the,
yeah,
you know, it'll come eventually. And there'll be demand for better wallets, right? There'll always be demand for better wallets. And there'll always be, like, the super mainstream, like, shitty by our standards wallets. Most people's first experience is, like, the Coinbase wallet, right?
Yeah.
And that hasn't stopped awesome wallet development from happening across the space, right? A lot of the things, yes, here mentioned, we know of teams that are like working on different parts. The hard part is like making it easy to use and putting it all together.
Yeah.
But as long as there should be demand for it, right? Like, that's why part of the reason we do this podcast, right? To educate people, to try and, you know, to people have a financial incentive to increase their Bitcoin knowledge, right? Unlike, yeah, a lot of other things. So hopefully, you know, you'll have a way more knowledgeable base of users than in other scenarios.
Yeah, it was actually promising to see that Wasabi Wednesday this week was a little active. The hashtag had some activity yesterday.
Well, it helped because Coinbase really, you know, they timed their announcement to try and boost Wasabi Wednesdays this week.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Coinbase's big announcement. Good segue. They've hired, or they've bought, basically a chain analysis company. I forget the exact name.
Neutrino.
Neutrino, yeah. Not to be confused with the SPV wallet. But the SPV-like wallet.
Protocol, yeah.
Protocol, yeah. But yeah, so they bought this Neutrino, this chain analysis company. It just so happens that a lot of the team on this Neutrino team is previously from the hacking team in Italy, famous for helping despotic governments spy on their citizens and sort of track them down and commit human rights violations against them, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. The hacking team.
Yeah. I think they were helping the Saudi government spy on their citizens, other governments spying on their citizens.
They were like mercenaries, right?
Yeah. Now they're working at Coinbase.
Yeah, so that's like, you know, that's not a surprise. The bigger news is, you know, that Coinbase is going like full on into chain analysis, right? Which, yeah, is, it should be expected, right? I feel like that's like a super easy path for them to monetize. They already have a ton of user information, and they just combine that with, you know, all the different blockchain information they have. And they have a particular, so like they've been working with like chain analysis and other companies for a long time now, presumably. But now they get to bring it all in-house, and they have way more information than like chain analysis has, because they have all the Coinbase user records, right? They have all the names and addresses of all these different people, and then all the merchant transactions. And, you know, presumably they release that non-custody wallet, right? The Coinbase wallet that has also a merchant side, like farm information from there. And they get all of that's proprietary for them. That's not like public information. So they are particularly well suited for this.
Yes, they are. Merchants, users out there, start using BTC Pay Server. Protect your sovereignty. Protect your privacy. Don't let Coinbase spy on you. No, that's a get. They're Coinbase positioning themselves in a very certain way. I would say, I don't know.
I feel like the important point here, though, is like we can be mad at Coinbase. Like, he seems like a horrible dude. And, like, Coinbase fucking sucks for plenty of reasons. But, like, it shouldn't be possible for them to do this tracking in the first place, right? Like, we should make it technically impossible for them to do it, or at least very difficult. Like, make their lives, like, as hard as fucking possible. And until that happens, like, I feel like, I don't know, complaining isn't going to solve anything. You should expect that. It's like a perfect path to monetization. If someone can do it, someone will do it. And, like, I'm waiting. I feel like Facebook would be fucking perfect for chain analysis. Like, if they just release, Facebook releases a wallet, everyone uses it, and then they, any big wallet provider would just, you know, they have so much information. And so sellable. You can monetize it so easily.
Yeah. And this is actually a good segue. You talking about, like, we can't complain because it's technically possible. Like, they're going to do it because they can. And we can't blame them for that. And that's true. Though, in that same vein, this week, Blockstream officially released test code for, like, what would be a proposed upgrade scenario to Schnorr. So hopefully, not hopefully, but this is very promising to see that Schnorr is finally hitting testnet, starting to test it out. We may be able to get a technology that can help boost fungibility and make chain analysis companies' jobs a lot harder. So the path towards making it impossible for these companies to track you down is still being forged forward. Thoughts on that, Matthew?
Yeah, and I think just like the increase in CoinJoin usage with Wasabi is a really big deal.
Yeah, let's get an update on Wasabi Wednesday. What did you check in on anything? Any stats that you have? Any upgrades?
No, there was a big upgrade last week. But you know, the more people that use Wasabi, the more effective it is, the faster it is. You know, we want as many CoinJoin transactions as possible so that you hide in the crowd way easier, right? So just seeing more people use it is, I think, is just a really big deal. And it kind of gives us, if we can get, like, widespread use of CoinJoin, ideally through other clients as well as Wasabi, you have multiple of them that all are, like, relatively, you know, compatible with each other. We can get, like, a bare minimum, you know, kind of privacy situation. We wouldn't put chain analysis companies out of business, but we can make their, you know, job really, really fucking difficult.
Yeah. Like, at what point is the privacy at the protocol level, or the fungibility at the protocol level, sufficient enough that the resources expended by these chain analysis companies just aren't worth it, and they have to figure out other ways?
Yeah.
I guess that's the equation you have to run.
It's like what we said last week. Like, at the end of the day, what it comes down to is I should be able to spend money to you without you knowing all my past and future transactions, right?
Yes.
And I think that's attainable. Some way it's attainable. It seems like it should be attainable without sacrificing the auditability of the supply, right? Which is like the big trade-off. So as long as we can attain that, that should be, in my mind, like the bare minimum to be able to, you know, say like, okay, now at least in this aspect we can ossify, or we can be like relatively solid.
No, I would agree. So we'll keep following that. It seems it is a race. You have two different types of wallet providers, Coinbase acquiring chain analysis companies, and then the samurais of the world working to destroy their heuristics at every turn. And it is a race, and it would seem that the race towards sort of Orwellian surveillance, or not the race, but the the money behind the surveillance team is a lot more than the privacy team. It's my 2 cents, my 2 satoshis.
Well, I mean, I also think that anyone who has Bitcoin can immediately see the value in that. So, yeah. Or they will see the value and they try and use it.
Yeah. And speaking of seeing value, I think we talked about this last week. Jack is starting to see the value of Lightning Network tips on Twitter.
He was stacking sats.
He was stacking sats. He just activated his tipping.me account.
I really didn't think he'd do that. Yesterday. I really didn't think he'd do that because it's a third-party company. I intentionally didn't include them in the when I tweeted out at him to try and take the Lightning Torch. I egged him on about accepting Lightning tips, but I didn't bring up tipping.me because I was he's not going to want to incidentally give exposure to this third party. But that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but and shout out to tipping.me. I mean, their extension, I downloaded it last week, and I mean, the button on Twitter's client on the desktop fits pretty seamlessly. Looks pretty natural.
What were the permission requests? I haven't downloaded the extension yet. Was it anything crazy?
I don't believe so.
I like that you can use it without an extension. You know, you don't even need to download. If you just want to tip someone, you could just use any Lightning wallet and the webpage. That's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to test out the, to see what it looked like. So I'm going to turn it off now. Because I did not do my due diligence and check out the permissions too well. You're going to be mad at me, Matt. I'm sorry.
Well, what I do is, I usually have, a browser that has extensions, and then I have, a sandbox browser that's just free of everything.
Yeah.
That's usually a good policy.
Yeah.
And I still just a bare minimum amount of extensions because I just don't. Just another hole. And then the other controversy, then there's people, because tipping.me is custodial. I think we kind of preempted this conversation last week when we talked about it, but it got pretty heated on Bitcoin Twitter.
I brought it up last week. Brian Troll's been leading the fight against the custodial tipping.me. It is an interesting debate to be had out. It does seem, though, that somebody from BTC Pay Server came out and said they can build a non-custodial implementation pretty easily, and they're going to come out with it, so we'll see if that happens.
But then everyone has to host their own tipping server to send 2 cents across Twitter.
Is that the case? I wasn't positive about that.
I don't know, I just assume so, right? If that's what you're trying to solve, if it's not custodial. I don't know, I think you should just withdraw often. One of the nice things about tipping, as opposed to change tip, which we were talking about, is change tip, you had to to use it, you had to load up your account, right? So you had to trust that custodial wallet with $100 or $50 or whatever you wanted to tip people with before you could tip. But with this, you don't even have to load anything up. You could just pay with any Lightning wallet, right? So then it's up to the receiver. Receiver can just pull out when he gets $5 or $10 or whatever.
Yeah. Which is something I would recommend, but I think I was following the debate on Twitter, and again, bringing back Brian Trolls, he brought up a good point that when you do sort of take those Satoshis off of tipping.me into your own custody, if you bring them into your own channel, be careful when you close that channel because you're going to mix up those tips with your UTXOs if you send them to an on-chain address. So that's a potential doxing scenario.
That's interesting.
I believe. Yeah.
So maybe send,
if you're going to close a Lightning channel, close it directly to Wasabi or something like that, if possible.
I mean, that's always been the issue with tips in general, is that they get linked. Like we were talking about, a lot of people just post addresses, right? And you can end up connecting the UTXOs way easier with that method. I mean, one option, this is kind of fucked up. One option around that is you could withdraw to Blue Wallet, which is custodial. And so you could withdraw custodial, and then from Blue Wallet you could go to regular BTC. And then you could go into Wasabi if you wanted to, I guess.
Yeah.
That's complicated. See, this is the point. The point is that our privacy guarantees are fucked in Bitcoin as it is. That we have to do all this shit to get to maintain any, and if you make any little like fuck up, then your privacy is fucked. Yeah,
this is not acceptable.
But I mean, Tipping.me is like a hack proof of concept that this guy, I think his name is Sergio, right, put together.
He seems like a good dude.
Yeah, it seems, and you know, it's gonna get better. You know, he knows these are issues as well.
And again, it's like something I touched on the newsletter today too. It's like, it's just proving a use case, like throwing the ball out a little bit, and then everybody else is like, all right, the ball's here now. Let's push it a little bit further. Let's make this a little bit less custodial to give users more control. Proof of concept is there, though. Tipping on Twitter is pretty cool. Like, seeing that people are tipping me for tweets, like one Satoshi for like tweets, is like pretty cool to see.
And then the other thing, like, which we also kind of preempted last week, where people are saying, like, why are you guys excited about change tip? Right?
Yeah.
I always liked tipping. And it's even cooler that you could send fucking one Satoshi. Like, I sent Jack one Satoshi, and I just put the comment, because I can. Like, that's just cool.
Right?
Yeah.
Is this time different, Matt? A lot of people are saying it's not.
I think this time is the same but better.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree.
That's cool. We're improving.
Yeah, I can see this lightning tipping on Twitter fizzle out pretty hard in the next like month or two. Similar to how CryptoKitties fizzled out pretty hard.
Well, there needs to be more like social levers there to basically pressure usage of it. I think that the most bullish thing that could happen here is that Jack gets sold on the idea and integrates it, both as a Bitcoin holder and a Twitter shareholder. And keep in mind, like, that's going to be totally custodial. And like I said in the last episode, like, we'll give him shit about it being custodial, but it's definitely going to be custodial. It's going to be a fucking privacy nightmare as well. But like, imagine if like on the different tweets it said how much was tipped to each tweet, and there was like a little bar that's, you know, filled up or stuff like that. Like, there's game elements where you can really
if you gamify it.
I mean, like, even like if you compare Tipping.me's setup compared to ChangeTip, like ChangeTip was way more of a social signal. Right, because when you tip someone, you literally tweeted it out to the whole world. I'm tipping you $5 from me to you. With Tipping.me, like, no one knows. If you don't even put in the message, no one knows you even tipped them.
That's a very good point. That's a very good distinction, too, UX-wise. One thing I think that Tipping.me could take from ChangeTip UX-wise is, like, basically if somebody tips an account that isn't created yet, maybe notifying that account, like, hey, somebody's trying to tip you, start this account. Because that was one thing ChangeTip did really well, basically create an account for you, and you could basically go claim that money.
Is that not what, like, Brave was doing that they got shit for?
Yeah, but they were, like, offering... I think Brave got shit because they're, like, if the user didn't accept the bat that was being donated to them, like, Brave would keep it or something like that.
Right, but ChangeTip, they just wouldn't send it if they didn't accept it.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a little distinction there.
It could be, like, a little spammy. Like, I mean, I even spoke, like, last week, like, my favorite use of ChangeTip was to be a spammy troll. Like, that was literally what I'm nostalgic about doing.
I went back after we recorded that. Actually, my friend, who I was sending like beers via ChangeTip in like 2015, like, brought up some old tweets. It was took me down memory lane. That was like, yeah, that was how I tried to get friends in the Bitcoin back in the day. I was like, dude, I'm going to tweet you some Bitcoin right now. Like, look at this shit.
Yeah.
In reality, I
love ChangeChip. Bitcoin at all. But, ChangeChip is great. And I think Tipping.me is pretty fun. Whatever. Don't keep a lot of money in it. It's a custodial wallet.
Yeah. And don't freak out over people that are keeping like $3 on a custodial wallet.
The privacy issue is, you know, it's a bit of consider anything that is connected into Tippin.me that guy Sergio can compromise your shit. Like, you can find out your UTXOs and stuff. Assume that.
Yeah. And maybe until proven otherwise, just use the Satoshis on there just to play Lightning Network games online. Just do something safe. Don't even take them off chain. Just keep them in the browser.
Yeah, I mean, like,
play light.
Like, all the people that are on Bitcoin Twitter are broadcasting their IP addresses to Twitter, you know? Like, there's, like, plenty of privacy issues that we have to, you know, I don't know. Just be aware, people.
Be aware. Hashtag be aware. What do we got next? Coin Mama, KYC breach, talking about fucking security, staying on this topic. Coin Mama and Exchange, where are they?
I have no idea. I've never heard of them till today.
I've heard of them before. I believe they're in Asia?
It sounds like an Asian exchange.
I'm
looking it up.
Yeah, they had a KYC breach. 450,000 customer records were lost.
Yeah, no coins. No coins. Just...
Yeah, personal information records.
Which is almost... Is just as bad, if not worse.
Is it, though? Everybody's personal information has been ganked at this point.
Marty, we were just talking about, like, privacy and everything, right? Like, this is...
I know.
That's a lot of people. Well, all the Americans got fucked by the Equifax one, so...
Equifax, yeah. Literally half the country, so...
But this is, like, passport scans, probably, and selfies, and...
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people just got doxxed. That's fucked.
That sucks.
This is why KYC is bad.
Right? And how, like, we've had this conversation so many times. When does it get to the point that people realize this and non-KYC options are okay? Go use HODL, freaks.
Oh, they're based in Slovakia.
Slovakia, okay.
I'm surprised they had KYC.
Yeah, again, slow news wake, freaks.
Oh, wait, February 20th, did they increase it? Now it says 1.4 million Coin Mama accounts. Maybe only 450K had KYC and some were just email addresses and stuff.
Interesting.
Fuck. Okay, well, that's not great.
Yeah, it's not great, and it's not the last... It's not the first, and this won't be the last time this happens. I'm trying to think, like, what can we do as consumers to sort of push back against KYC AML?
Don't use KYC exchanges or services, except, like, you might have to use just one just to get on to begin with. And if you do, just use one. You know, pick one that you think is... You know, place your bet on which one you think is the most reputable. You know, if you're in America, we really like Cash App. And then, like, have that be your only KYC service. Just get in. And then once you get in, just Wasabi, right? And then you should be relatively better off.
Yeah. And again, ideally, we don't have to worry about this at some point in the future. But we should really push for this. Because this is a topic actually somebody tweeted at Matt and I to talk about, and I actually wrote about in the Bent earlier this week. The battle for privacy and freedom in the digital age. It's heating up. Last week, I believe, or the week before, I think this blog post might be a couple weeks old, the IMF official blog, the official blog of the International Monetary Fund, basically released a blog post explaining how the world can push for a cashless society, on route to instituting negative interest rate policies. So basically, the one of the institutions, part of the global banking system that is charged with sort of pushing the fore of quote-unquote economic theory and sort of monetary policy, is championing a cashless society, a dystopian cashless society run on e-cash distributed by governments and banks within the system, so they can institute negative interest rates on deposits. So essentially taxing people for putting money in the bank. And this, again, this is our favorite, one of our favorite stats here, but at a time when the average American can't afford a $400 emergency expense, the banking system wants to tax your deposits right away and make your life a little bit harder. Matt, thoughts?
Well, we kind of already knew this was the plan, right? This is just kind of crazy that they wrote it on a blog.
Yeah. Like, so overtly.
Yeah, it's pretty...
And that's, like, that's what I wrote about in the Bent. Like, the thing I want to stress to you freaks that, like, so they have to do this because they've been on 100, what was it, 1913? So that's, like, 106-year experiment we've been on now of monetary policy. And due to the amount of debt that the collective global central banking system has accrued, they literally cannot raise interest rates above a certain point because they will not be able to service the interest rate payments on that debt. And so literally their only option at this point, given how much debt they've accrued, how economies around the world are slowing, and basically where inflation is at some points in the world, they have to institute negative interest rate policies to sort of keep the charade going, to keep the music playing, to be able to pay back the interest that they've accrued on the debt that they've created.
Well, right. The strategy, the recent strategy is when you have like some kind of recession or something, you lower rates, right? So if rates are already near zero, then the only place to go is negative.
Yes.
But you can't do that if cash exists, because then people will just take cash and put it under their mattresses.
Yes.
So that pressure, combined with the fact that people just don't like using cash that much anymore, will probably lead to the end of cash in most places, so that they can not only do negative interest rates, but also surveil the public way easier.
Exactly. And what was most scary about this blog post, in my opinion, was like the attempt to like normalize this activity. Like what people have to realize is negative interest rates should never be like good. Like nobody should ever welcome them with open arms. We literally have to do this because of the monetary experiments that we've been running on a global scale for the last 100 years. Like the decisions of these academics who run monetary policy have forced us into this corner, and because of their mistakes, they now want to punish everybody with negative interest rates to sort of make up for their planning on the go, which has turned out terribly. That's what I said in the like newsletter. People need to wake up and notice like all is not well. This should not be happening in a global economy that's healthy and has a good monetary system.
And some countries have gone like quasi negative already, right?
Yeah, I believe Switzerland and Sweden are negative already. Countries that are essentially cashless. I think Sweden like is almost cashless. Pretty sure Switzerland's up there as well.
And like what a lot of places do ahead of time is like they make it so like you can't make purchases over $3,000 in cash or whatever. They like make all these limits and these arbitrary spending limits. And then you get to a point where even if cash isn't like banned, it's like got a criminality to it, right? Like, oh, why do you want to spend $150 in cash in that store? What are you like up to something? Or so it's a very slippery slope.
Yeah, Swiss Bank is running a negative 75 bips interest rate policy right now, I believe.
But I think it's for higher deposit level accounts. It's one of the ways they've been getting around like people freaking the fuck out.
Yeah, this article is from 2015. I'm not sure what the Swiss banking policy is right now at this moment, but they have instituted negative interest rate policy in the past, and I do believe their interest rates are still negative right now, just not certain.
Either way, this is extremely bullish for Bitcoin, right, would we say?
Yeah.
On a fundamental long-term level. This is not, you know, short-term trading. It doesn't matter at all for that. But for long-term, this is, like, going to be the main, one of the main value drivers of Bitcoin.
Yes, I would agree.
And they can't help themselves. They have no other option. This is the path.
Yeah, man, that's, like, it's sort of scary, right? It's, like, they're forced, like, when, like, is there a point, and this is something I've pondered for years, like, coming from finance, and, like, I always, like, I'm probably young and naive, but, like, in my early 20s, I was always just like, all right, maybe there'll be a point in time where I'll, like, just stop collectively and say, hey, this is obviously not working. This is, we should not keep doing the same things and expecting different results. But it seems as though we're being pushed towards sort of a point at which we're forced to confront it, and we don't collectively sort of try to attack it head on.
Yeah, I mean, I think I realized, like, four years ago, that just everyone's kind of winging it, right?
Yeah.
There's no, like, there's really no good answer. And everyone would rather just push it off than try and do anything of substance. That's why, like, continue.
No, it's a good segue into what I wrote about yesterday in the Bent. Shout out to Arbed Out. He highlighted a passage of Iranian history. It really had me question, like, why can't we do this today? So, like, apparently in 1294 AD, the Mongol ruler of Persia, like, tried to decree paper money into his realm based off of, like, the advice from Kublai Khan, and, like, the merchant class basically revolted through Kublai Khan, like, into the square, like, toward this guy who basically suggested that they introduce paper money into their economy, and said fuck no, and stuck to, like, the dinar, which was a silver-backed commodity. For 600 years they had, like, sound monetary policy until 1931, until England took the world off the gold reserve,
they took the pound off the gold reserve, right?
Yeah, they took the pound off the gold reserve, that's exactly it. But just, like, it's like small stories throughout history, like, people, like, at some point in history had, like, the innate basically understanding that, like, paper money is bad, and there's many examples, this just being one of them, of people revolting about paper money being introduced into their societies. But maybe we are so just, we've been so inundated with paper money our whole lives, and it's the system we grow up in, we don't even know to question it. But there are, like, again, signs throughout history that, hey, people cared about this at one point, maybe we should start caring about it here in the present at some point. I just thought that was interesting.
Well, I mean, like, I remember, like, my uncle the gold bug, right? Like, I feel like everyone has an uncle the gold bug just screaming about paper money. But yeah, for us, for people our age, like, most of them think, like, it's the way it's always been, right? They don't realize that we came off the gold standard, what, like, in 1970 or something like that. Like, it's really recent.
1971, when we officially disconnected from the gold completely. The process began again, like, going back to, like, 1913, 1931.
It's also what they teach you in school. They don't teach you this shit in school.
Right?
Like, the FDR's gold seizures. Like, they don't talk about any of it. It's all whitewashed.
Be aware, people. Be aware. This stuff happened. Shout out Arb.
What? Yeah, shout him out. Shout him out.
Shout out Arbed Out. One of the most underrated Twitter followers out there. Excuse me, @ Arbed Out.
That's at ArbeDout.
Thanks for spelling it out.
Good dude.
Very good dude.
I think, you know, people will slowly come to realize it, and as they do, you know, Bitcoin adoption will increase.
Yeah, I agree.
All this stuff, like, used to drive me fucking nuts. And now that Bitcoin exists, I'm just like, I got my peace of mind. You know, this is good for Bitcoin, so.
Yeah.
We'll just see how it turns out.
Yeah. What else is good for Bitcoin is if we get more developers. And I wrote about Bitcoin Optech last week. I was actually just reading them this morning. David Harding put out a great Bitcoin Optech newsletter earlier this week, filled with a lot of dense information. A lot of the guys at Chaincode are working on that. And if any of you guys are developers out there, Chaincode residency is coming up this summer again. So go to residency.chaincode.com if you'd be down to check that out. For their summer residency, I believe it's closing soon, the registration. So if you're interested in learning from some of the best, go check out Chaincode's residency. What do we got here, Matt? Slow news day. I don't like this separation. I don't like talking to you through a screen.
Everyone should subscribe to Bitcoin Optech. Like, even if you're not a developer or whatever, just subscribe to it. Pay attention to it. Really good resource.
And while you're at it, subscribe to this podcast. That's what we need, freaks. We need, if you guys are liking this stuff, make sure you subscribe, share it, I'm trying to blow it up. We got a lot of good interviews coming up. I've been working hard to get some quality, underrated guests, and I think we got a lot of good things cooking here.
Yeah, dude, you've been hustling. I haven't listened to your two most recent pods. I'm looking forward to it. I've been in vacation mode. I'm behind on my pods.
Stay in vacation mode. You got a long flight back. You'll have time to catch up.
That was the other one. Elon recorded with ARK Invest.
Yeah.
Our buddy Yassine shared it on Twitter. I haven't listened to it yet. I don't think you have yet either, right?
I have not, but apparently he thinks Bitcoin has a beautiful design.
Yeah, so I got to put that on in the plane.
Yeah, I'll take that, Elon. Elon, if you ever want to come do a rabbit hole recap, let us know. Invite is open.
Yeah, you got Jack coming up March 1st. Gonna fly out there for him. That's
fly
coming
out there
up
for
soon.
Him next week.
Yeah, dope.
It's a week away. Yeah. Sorry, this was a little off this week, freaks. The remote recording. Not a fan.
Yeah, well, you know, we're fortunate enough that we get to record together, you know, 9 times out of 10, right? Most people don't have that liberty.
That is true. What do you got? What do you got on tap for tonight? You going to dinner?
Yeah, I got a nice
swimming in the canal.
We got some really nice dinner tonight, and then we come home tomorrow. Should be good.
All right, man. We'll enjoy it. Wine and dine your lady. Take in the canal scene in Amsterdam one more night, and then we'll see you back stateside next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Stay humble, guys. Chill lightly.
All right. Peace and love, freaks.